welcome to Universal Talk. And today's discussion will be the analysis of Comet 67P. And on the call tonight, we have some very special guests. We have with us Tolik, we have KP from Hawaii, and we have Brad Johnson from Canada. And just to set the stage, prior to this show, I did a meditation. And I just wanted to tap into this comet and see what perspectives I would get and bring it to the table. And then we'll start with our panel of guests. What I was getting was it showed me this wave. And if the information that came through was how our solar system and universe goes on these up and down waves perspective, it's like I'm watching these waves go up and down, and then there's the galactic plane that kind of cuts through the middle of these waves. And as we're coming up to the peak, we get into more of a positive vibration of energy. And that's when we have these leaps in evolution and these positive experiences. And that's where we are, at least in my perspective, within this meditation that I did. And the information that also came through was interesting. This comet is putting out waves of sound that we as humans cannot hear until it's amplified. And so it puts it into perspective of, okay, well, what else is resonating out there, sounds and light that we can't see or hear? And so with this comet that's coming through, What it was akin to, the information that came through, was it's almost like here on this planet where we have fiber optics that come into our house. But as the information goes through with these fibers of glass through a medium of light, they also have to stop at certain substations to be amplified and sent back out. And so what I was getting was, this comet was coming through and other celestial bodies like that. And as it comes close to our solar system, the information is sent to the sun, amplified, and sent back out. And so the information that it's projecting is almost like in these times that we're in, all of this was predestined or pre-planned, so to speak. And so these are just things that, you know, you could say are predicted or forecast. And on many layers or many levels, this comet, if, depending on the person's perspective, is how you'll see it. And so if you're coming from a 3D perspective, it looks like a physical object in 3D as a comet. From the next level up of understanding or awareness, it may be that it's a creation from a higher dimensional or another body of being that has created this for the purpose of study, for sending out this information. And from an even higher perspective, it's simply creation at its highest source of a love vibration for the purpose of an experience. In other words, we can perceive it, and therefore it's our experience. So what are we going to do with it, and how are we going to interpret it within our individual consciousness? And so with that, I'm just going to set the stage, and I'm going to go with Tolik first this time. And Tolik, I know that we had a discussion when I was doing some research on this, and I wanted you to talk to the boys upstairs, as you always say. Right. And so I'm curious to see what the information that you got, and then we'll move on to each panelist, and we'll just kind of go with the flow of the information that comes. Sure.
Okay. Thanks for the introduction. And actually, part of what you're saying is very accurate and is in alignment with what I learned from, at this moment in time, my primary Andromeda Council contact is a woman by the name of Andromine, and she's the chairwoman of the Intergalactic and Interdimensional Telecommunications Advisory Board to the council. And so she's the person I've been talking to for the past, I guess, 5 or 6 months. Here's the information that she and the commander of the Andromeda Council primary biosphere share with me. They said that this comet 67 was sent into deep space by a race of people called the Dyni. These people are not members of the Andromeda Council or the Galactic Federation. However, because these two governance, management, and trade organizations are responsible for this area of space, the Dyni needed to have permission to explore here, even if it's only remotely. And that's specifically what this is. This comet 67P, it's a long range exploration probe, if you will. And its mission is to explore the cosmos and to gather data. And it measures the various specific properties of each solar system it encounters, its boundaries, its planets, its moons, and specifically to do so when it comes across a 3D planet with sentient, intelligent life. This might include us on planet Earth. So, when this happens, there's this highly advanced, let's call it a round spherical computer at the core of this comet, the core of what is in effect a probe. And when this probe comes across a 3D planet with intelligent life, it then triggers, if you will, a collection system. And the collection system is actually the pyramids and the other structures that are on the comet surface. It triggers them to open and to activate as part of a relay system. So, Joe, what you were saying about a signal getting relayed is accurate. As I understand it, the top of the pyramids and the other structures, they open slightly to scan the various planets in each solar system it approaches. And when it picks up certain frequencies, that tells the computer at the core, inside the probe, that there's 3D life on a particular planet, then this thing activates. It starts collecting data and transmitting it back to their home world. Now I'm gonna break on the description of the comet and spend some time talking about who these people are. The home world, at least the name given it by the scientists on the Andromeda Council biospheres, their home world is called Pexol. And the name of their sun, at least the name that the Andromeda Council people give it, is called Xtek. Now, interestingly enough, Joe, you mentioned something about seeing the cosmic or celestial plane and going through it. Well, what I had to do as I was getting this information and they're giving me images, I said, well, let me back up. They said, in order to see this star, you'd actually have to go through the Andromeda Galaxy and come out the other side. And I happen to have Stellarium loaded on my computer. I said, well, I can't do it from, you know, if you're looking at it head on. So I had to turn it, I had to turn the software on its side. And I was astounded at what I saw. When you turn Stellarium's perspective on its side, instead of looking at the Andromeda Galaxy M31 straight on, I turn it on its side. And what did I see on the exact same plane, you know, from like left, from right all the way to left? The star Vega. And Vega, as everybody knows, is located in the constellation Lyra. And what these people did, what this ancient race did, was send this probe through a wormhole from their homeworld back at the star Vega in order for it to get here into this solar system. Now I'm going to talk about how it got here and how it moves. I think, as I said before in other conversations with you guys and other people, I'm not a scientist, so just kind of bear with me as this as I describe what I've learned about the propulsion system of this comet. I've been told that it operates based on a mix of hydrogen and helium and other critical elements, which are highly compressed in an internal chamber. This is inside the comet. And that makes this a fusion reaction propulsion system with almost a limitless lifespan. And I've told by my people that this propulsion system has been used by these people simply because it's a highly efficient means of propulsion to go vast distances. I'm almost finished this wrap up of this report. The last piece is specifically about the Dyni people who sent this out. Apparently, they're very, very old, a very ancient 3D civilization. And when I'm saying 3D, I mean that they have physicality, they are still organic like we are. And they are aware of the coming higher frequency, higher octave shift of this solar system, including planet Earth and its people. You know, whether you call it upper 4D, 5D, they know it's coming. And they specifically sent this probe, Comet 67P, into this area of space at this particular moment in time to gather data on this planet Earth before it shifts upward into the next vibrational life. So this probe is going to be collecting data now, which is this time of transition. It'll collect data at the moment of transformation, and then it'll stop collecting data, and it will project and relay all of this information back to their home world. My people also describe the kinds of people that these people, the Dyni, are. And apparently, they're very, very calm, very, very wise, very, very peaceful, very evolved, and they're simply explorers. And their primary motivation in collecting data is simply to learn if there might be an opportunity to open bilateral trade with a race of people they haven't met before. Simple as that. And what I've just told you and everybody else about is the short version of what I've learned. There was a lot of information that I had to kind of compile and distill until I kind of got it nutshelled in its essence. But this is what I've learned from my Andromeda Council contact people. And it's only my perspective from the people of the Andromeda Council. I can't speak for anybody else on this call and in this conversation, but it certainly seems plausible. It's a probe. It's sent out into deep space to collect information on sentient 3D worlds and send that information back to their people to see if there might be an opportunity to establish trade relations. In a nutshell, that's it. You know, the implications that it has for people on Earth, that's a different story. And so that's the totality of what I've learned. And I'm certainly curious to listen and hear what you guys have to say and what you've learned and your own perspectives as well.
Yeah, okay, great. You know, I have other things that came through for me, but I want to move on to KP. You know, I know you're a highly spiritual person. I know you're in Hawaii. You're on the Big Island. And so I would like to maybe call you out right now, in the present moment of right now, if you were to tune in and tap into the energy of what we're discussing and that comet 67P, or the implications for Earth or why it's out there, why there's so much interest from these space stations that would or space agencies that would spend probably millions of dollars to get this I don't know what they call it, they called it the Rosetta mission, I guess, and they had something land on it. And so what would your perspective be at a spiritual sense? Like, what are you sensing right now?
Well, aloha, everyone who's listening. And this is, we were talking at one point prior to the show about waves. And I don't recall all of the different places I've seen this, but I have felt, well, I guess there was a Divine Cosmos, a David Wilcott comment that talking about wave. And just the day before I posted that, it was a wave. Something is, and I felt drawn strongly to go to the ocean. This was about yesterday I did, but 2 days before that I did, and was catching these marvelous waves that I really did not anticipate coming in. They weren't huge waves for me, but in any event, there's been a continual message that I've been getting that we are in the midst of a large group of cosmic, I'll call them higher dimensional or multidimensional waves that are coming in via the galactic, our own galaxy galactic center, but also the cosmic central sun. And it's really amazing because this whole process, in my mind, this probe or 67P is coming through to assist what you were getting. I really tuned in with what you were getting, Joe, about the signaling to the sun, amplifying signals coming back. It's almost like it's also assisting our center sol in this solar system, to ramp up its energies, ramp up the wave. We are coming forth into much. For some reason, it feels like it needed some not assistance, but it needed. This was part of the whole plan, and it's amazing. The connection is just really coming through very strongly. That these waves are continually ramping up, and they're not necessarily ramping up in one big, huge wave. Which I would say, 4 or 5 years ago, that's what I thought would happen. You know, my mind thought that would happen. And it was like, oh, they're all going to show up all at once. But now I can see where it's much more beneficial to humanity for this to come in phases. And we are going to connect very consciously before too long, whatever that means. But I do connect with this probe, or whatever you want to call it, that this communication device or this amplification or this transmittal device, whatever you want to call it, it's really here to assist us through that as well, you know, our own sun. So for what you get from that, that's what I have right now.
No, that's perfect. And it's quite relevant because, you know, when you have different people from different parts of the planet getting the same or similar things, it has to at least raise an eyebrow and go, wow, that's really interesting. And so, you know, I also feel that these things are coming in waves for the purpose of assimilation or for the human genome and DNA. Because if we were to get this all at once, just hammered, I mean, not a lot of people could live through it because physicality is dense and this high vibration all at one time literally would obliterate the physicalness. So I think it has to come in waves, just like you say, so just so we can, the way I look at it is light is so fast and vibrating so fast that whenever it contacts physicality at a lower vibration and denseness, it takes some time, what we perceive as time, in order for us to raise to that particular vibration and then on to the next wave. And so without these waves, I think it's a blessing in disguise, even though many of us are impatient. We're like, come on, when's this event? When's this going to happen? When's that? We don't see any tangible evidence. And so what I also got, and I'll just say one more thing here, and then I'll bring Brad in on it, was that I just lost my train of thought. So I'm just going to bring Brad in. I had so much.
Hey, could I, would you mind if I, Joe, if I add just one more thing? I'd be interested in what Brad has, if he has any looks about this as well. I was in the wave yesterday, and I love to body surf. That's my primary connection with the ocean, and there was waves coming in, and I was very surprised. I don't go because I know there's going to be big waves or this wave or that wave. I just go when my spirit feels called to go. And this particular time, I got a message out there that I was catching certain waves, but they were sort of coming in pairs. And when they come in, of course, you know, anybody who's body surfed or whatever, sometimes you get the backwash, and that also forms another wave, and that's kind of the way it was. But one thing I found, I said, these waves are forming so that I have to, in order for me to catch a tube, a barrel, they weren't tubes. The tubes looked like the eyes of a needle, you know, that sort of thing. And I had to be real particular about how I turned my body in order to body surf this tube that was sort of narrow. And I feel that for all of humanity, they're each having their own wave. People are learning that there's new waves coming in, and some it's going to take longer than others maybe, but people are learning how to surf the particular energies that are coming in and be flexible and to be able to go with it and allow this wave to carry them to the next level. So that's my metaphysical stuff on that.
All right, Brad, come on in on this.
Yeah, I mean, there's a really great conversation going on here relating to the comments. I was actually just doing a conscious matrix communication relating to the comments just before getting on the air here tonight. And a lot of it really does have to do, again, there is a good commonality here as well. It really does represent an artificial spacecraft. It certainly is of that. It basically does have an interior hollowed out structure, which is basically like a command center or a lot of the technological aspects there. Part of its propulsion system has to do with the radio waves that they are picking up. So I believe that may almost in that sense be like the aura representing the spacecraft itself. I did get a particular form of origin relating to the spacecraft itself. But what I have discovered is that it may have something to do with Orion. It may have something to do with ancient reptilian technology as well. Again, this is just all perspective in that way. Many of the ancient reptilian races would actually utilize this form where they would take certain forms of moons or asteroids that were basically self-created and basically hollow them out and utilize them as spacecrafts. So a lot of them can definitely fall on that. I have discovered that there will be certain forms of course changes that may happen with this. So certain forms of reports have related to torque being a result of this kind of comet that is making court, that is just kind of moving into different forms of arrangements relating to its rotation cycles. I do feel that, again, it is on some type of momentum and inertia path. I did not really get the feeling that it really has any major correlation to Earth, though. I don't feel that is what is going on here. I believe really what it is that it is something that is an observation. I feel that it is something that is going to pass us by in certain ways, but it is a very, very ancient form of spacecraft. It has been around for quite some time, well over probably millions of years. But I do feel that there is a passage. I do feel that it does have some type of gravitational constant that will affect our star system altogether, that will represent that of Terra. But I do not feel that this has anything to do with DNA, not so much. I just feel that the result of it will be, again, the energy that comes together through the star system, through our sun, etc., will have some type of amplification effect indeed with the passing of this comet. And again, it is kind of like a wave, like what you guys are sending as well too. But again, it's not that the direct responsibility of the comet will generate this. Again, it's part of, again, the sum of its parts, so to speak. Many other different factors are going to be coming in and coming out. A lot of the coronal mass ejections that we get from the sun are basically stargates that come through other planets, planetary-sized spacecraft that actually emerge from the sun on a very frequent basis. So this is why we sometimes see a lot of the SOHO probes picking up a lot of these planetary-sized vessels, very large vessels as well, too, just after coronal mass ejections happen. This is just all part of many different forms of transits that come through. So there's actually a lot more waves that get created through these planetary-sized vessels that actually come through the sun and are actually doing certain forms of caretaking energetically with the sun. But again, the comet will certainly play its part as the sum of its parts for some of this transformation that is happening. Again, this is a wave effect. But again, there are. I do not feel that this is anything of a major correlation. I do feel that, again, a lot of the research is very interested in the form of harvesting or just looking into the technology of this particular comet as it is, as it stands out a lot more than a lot of other passing comets. But I do feel that within 2015 and 2016, there's going to be an opportunity for a lot more comets to actually come our way. And I feel that a lot of new comets that are actually going to be coming in are actually going to be a lot more profound than this particular one. This one, again, is very ancient, but I feel that if you're really looking at it in the forefront, a lot of the comets that are coming are going to be kind of the main event, so to speak. This, I feel, is a peripheral type of comet, and I feel that mainly its interest is technological in regards to a lot of the Earth Agency's of perspective, so to speak. But again, it certainly will play a part in a wave. But I do not feel it's anything major relating to the correlation of a massive shift.
You know, Brad, that's exactly what I was getting. This is like a precursor to some bigger events. It's almost like a preparation for what's to come as far as the observation of humans. Now, I know you said that it really doesn't have a lot to do with Earth, but would you clarify that a little bit? And let me give you a little context. Just by virtue of so many people observing this comet and it putting out this frequency that we're now aware of, and also the space agencies that's landing on it for their own agenda, but just by allowing humanity to be focused towards this this comet, so to speak, or probe, don't you think that it has some kind of effect, and is that what you meant by this is part of the waves that we're talking about?
Yeah, that's going to generate a different type of effect. So basically, with a lot of the attention that we're getting, in a way it's an association to a disclosure, because now we're starting to see a lot of this attention coming upon it. And so really, its path in regards to its trajectory and in regards to its effect of a wave is very peripheral. However, the very presence of this particular comet into everything that it is capable of, what it has upon its surface, is now becoming a forefront of a lot of attention. So again, this along with many other things, I mean, we've had that with Comet Eleni, we've had that with ISON, we've had a lot of different really great fascinations with these particular comets as well. It wasn't too long ago that with Comet ISON, a lot of people would see that these shifts were actually alongside this comet as it was moving into our star system as well, too. So I do feel that its path is peripheral, and in regards to a lot of its makeup, so to speak, it's working together on the sum of the whole of the parts, a peripheral trajectory as well, too. But it's the attention that we're starting to bring forward. A lot of just really good whistleblowers and amateur astronomers, et cetera, that are able to pick up on this comet are now starting to notice this. And again, in a way, that is a forefront to already a lot of the information and evidence we're discovering that can lead into a further climax, so to speak, of increased disclosure.
Okay, awesome. And so I just want to, Tolik, I want to bring you in next year, but I'm some of the things that I got are what Brad's talking about with, you know, the precursor. But one of the major things that I got was that everything, like the whole is in all the parts. And so some of the things that we're witnessing, in fact, everything we witness is just a reflection of what we are internally. So whether you look at it as in a metaphor or a symbolism, do you feel that any of this, these celestial bodies has anything to do with us knowing ourselves?
This is Tolik. Geez, at least three or four issues that I want to address as part of my response. So I think that the concept I'm going to address right now is spot on in terms of what Brad was just addressing, and that is this specific celestial body, this artificially manufactured comet, which is in fact a probe, and which in fact has a hollowed out core and has this spherical computer that is collecting data. it may not and certainly is not focused specifically on the planet Earth. When it was sent out millions of years ago, it was sent out and its mission was to explore the cosmos and collect data, and specifically to collect data about 3D organic planets that have sentient, intelligent life. To that fact, Earth is relevant, because at some level, we are sentient and intelligent, hopefully. So that's one way that it's relevant. Now, the other side of this issue is what Brad was later addressing, which is how is it relevant to us on Earth? Well, because it is the topic of the moment, and I also believe because there is this detectable radio signal that is trackable, which is the data being sent back to their home world, it makes this particular celestial body unique. And I'm sure that our scientists have sent their own exploratory lander up there because of that radio signal. They're trying to probably decipher it and figure out what is it all about. The other topic that I wanted to address in this case head on is that I have specific information about this race of people called the Daini. They are actually mineral-based. They're many, many, many years old. They're very ancient, wise people. I understand that they're very, very tall, taller than normal people in the fifth dimension. If you heard them speak, it would sound like rocks scraping. And most of the communication that they do is via telepathy. And they have a humanoid shape, as we would consider humanoid. Their shape emulates a head with eyes, a really small nose, small mouth, shoulders, arms, legs, torso. They're humanoid in shape, but their basis of composition is minerals, you know, as in sand or rocks. That's what you would see a mineral-looking being if you were to look at one of these people. So I just wanted to address who they are and how long they've been around. As Brad indicated, they're very, very, very ancient. They've been around for a long, long time, and that part is very accurate.
One thing I also missed out on as well, too, is I felt that there was actually like a group consciousness, like a group of beings that were on this. Again, a lot of the direct information about the beings weren't too clear for me, but it felt like there was almost like a type of organization or some type of federation in that sense that was associated. So I'm feeling that we may be looking at a multiple amount of beings. Again, I feel that there is a connection, too, with those mineral beings as well, too. But I feel that there may also be other different forms of life that will be on the particular comet as well, too, in regards to certain sustainment purposes. So that may be something that we're also
quite possible.
At as well.
Yeah, I did not. It doesn't mean yes or no. I did not get any information about beings, live sentient people being on it. It's certainly quite possible. I just didn't ask.
The old feeling was that, again, it was once abandoned and now reactivated. So that may also represent a lot of the shadows of the past, so to speak, about beings that were once on it, or that some beings of that nature may still be on it now and have come back. But apparently this station, kind of like a station or spacecraft itself, was abandoned for quite some time and has come back because, again, there is a type of mission that it has come online
right,
to perform.
Right, and it from what I've learned, it specifically triggers and comes alive when it senses a 3D organic planet with intelligent life. And so it starts, basically, these structures on the surface start to trigger, and they're like, collect data, collect, 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 collect them. I don't know how long they've been collecting,
That's kind of been funny as well, too, because when I kind of tapped into it, it felt like it was very mechanized, something very mechanical, like a lot of binary in that sense, a lot of binary.
And that actually, what you just said makes a lot of sense, because I after Joe and I spoke, he had sent me a couple of the links, and one of them, because I was not familiar with this situation until Joe and I spoke, and then I talked to our people about it. One of the YouTube links had a recording of what we would hear if it were audible to the human ear. And it definitely had a series of patterns starting from a lower vibration, raising to higher and higher ones. And there were definitely patterns in terms of this data, these radio waves. So again, I'm sure that the reason our own space exploration people, NASA in concert with the European Space Agency, that's why they're there. They're there to try to figure out what this radio signal is all about, among whatever other things, whatever exploring they're going to do on this rock.
What I've also just recently discovered as well, too, is that they've actually have lost transmission with their probe, that their probe has apparently, quote-unquote, shut off or terminated transmission. This has actually just been a very recent update that the probe that I believe was called, I can't remember what the name was by chance, I think it was Rosetta, but I think that right now it has actually been offline, so I'm not too sure if it's something that's temporarily gone offline or perhaps some sort of interference has taken place or what have you. But there was just recently an update about it actually going offline. And it may also have to do in that sense maybe capturing something that didn't want to be shared with the public or who knows. But again, something of that of those lines brought this into an offline conversation.
I'd like to briefly address KP's perspective of waves. And this is more of an analogy than anything else, but with all the things that I've learned, I believe that this, for lack of a better word, sighting, is consistent with an increase in activity in space, in this area of space that our solar system and our planet is traveling through. And much like the ocean has a consistent set of waves, that means you're going to get sets of waves. And sometimes there are outliers. There's more waves, there's less waves. But this time around, I believe that we're going to see a continual increase, to use the metaphor, in wave activity. Meaning, this comet, much like you said, is going to be the first of many celestial bodies that will be traveling through the cosmos that's going to get the attention of the people on this planet as part of the whole wake-up process. My last comments for now.
Yeah, if I can add something here that I got earlier, it was as soon as you mentioned this name, I know it all ties in, because you say 67P. Well, I don't know how they number these things, but the first thought that came in, he says, well, okay, then maybe there'll be another one, but the big one's going to be 69. You know, when we do a 69, and I'm literally, not physically, but you know, one of the most enjoyable positions when we're, having relations with each other is the 69. And it's like, I immediately got that this is a type of, there's something that's coming next, and then there's something that's coming after that. And the 69 is like a big one. And possibly that could relate to the divine, you want to call it the recognition that there is both the divine, there's a masculine and a feminine. And when you bring those together, that's when the birth happens. So,
good point.
I'm not trying to put any X-rated things out there, but hey, they gave it to me, I guess. So.
Yeah, it's an interesting consideration, you know, because I think with anybody, you naturally go to that number next. Well, what are the implications of that number? What does it mean? That's a very intimate setting. And
right.
What does that mean in terms of what's next for us on planet Earth as we continue to evolve and become more aware of a lot of things that are going on around us? For my own part, I'm going to provide a global number I've talked to address before. From what I've learned 3.5 years ago or so, when I first started this work, I was aware at that time, and the number had been pretty consistent for about 20 years, that roughly 40% of society was what we would call spiritually awake and aware. And just in the past 3.5 years, the people of the Andromeda Council are certainly surprised that the number of people on Earth that are awake and aware has risen to 53% of the global population. They're astounded that it's raised that high in such a short period of time. So there's some amazing things going on with the people of this planet. Any other comments are welcome, certainly.
I think the pause that we're blown away. the other thing that I'll add here is that, you know, as it seems the path that I've been chosen and agreed to is kind of involving the what's called the Kingdom of Hawaii. I was speaking with someone not too long ago that is someone connected with some of the sacred temples here, and just he was describing something about one of the gourds, which was often used by apparently Hawaiians, and talking about this and how it's shaped like a man's sexual organ, and it was something about there was a sacred meaning, you know, an understanding, and they really did. They had this, the connection, divine masculine, divine feminine, and these would represent certain things. And this particular gourd, and he was just sort of almost broke into, you know, he kind of breaking into tears when he felt that when the missionaries came over, they wanted to, of course, they didn't understand this, but they wanted to essentially, we're trying to throw all this away and cover all this up. And when they saw something like that, just like that when they saw people coming over here, I'm sure anywhere in the world, people, the missionary people who were dressed in their long coats and whatever hats and this and that and had their Bibles and their hammers made out of Bibles, you know, and they just wanted to trash that whole thing. And so it's kind of a connection, which is one reason I feel that this, what the process is going on here on the islands of Hawaii, the Hawaiian archipelago, and by the way, most of us now who are working with this thing, we call it the Kingdom of Hawaii. We don't call it the State of Hawaii. It never has been a state. It never was a territory. It never was a. It was a territory, but it never was annexed. It was never legally annexed. It was never legally becoming a state. But there is something that is rising among what's going on here. You see the surface level, and all people are driving in states and this and state that and tax this and tax that. But there's something that's coming together here that's really, I feel, is opening a lot of things up for the entire planet. And there's many areas where, I mean, this is not the only one, but this connection with the divine, I don't know how to call it, but that masculine aspect and the feminine, realizing it's all one, it's all together, and that it now will also include, and you speak of these mineral beings, just like, well, so many I know here are connected, have been very connected with the mineral kingdoms, the plant kingdom, the ocean kingdom, all these elements. It has nothing to do with being, you know, okay, oh, we're going to have a king now. Oh, great. Now he's going to give an edict and we got to follow this and all this and all that. It's not going to be anything like that, at least as I viewed it.
So is it more about acknowledging the sacredness of that specific location on the planet? You know, the sacredness of the Hawaiian archipelago?
It's partly about that. But every part of the planet, as far as I'm concerned, is not the place that's sacred, it's where you are within yourself that is the sacred place. So I've been in the middle of downtown Chicago, and it's like driving past Soldier Field or whatever it was, and I was like, but that was my own sacred location at that time. But particularly here, there's some, one of the things that happened when I was going around the country the last half of 2013 was that people would often, there's kind of a connection to the, I'll call it the paradise energy here, and the recognition of, oh yes, they used to be with no clothes, and all the, they've seen the movies like, say, Mutiny on the Bounty or Hawaii, and they would say, oh, they're all, you know, and they'd all be, the sexuality would be free, and of course they, you know, they had a connection with that, and there was no difference between what they were, you know, there was a connection between all of it, but it was more than just having sex. It was the connection, the divine feminine, divine masculine coming together and enjoying, you know, being in joy with the physicality. So I feel that a lot of people really connected with my license plates. You know, all of a sudden they see this Hawaii license plate, and I know a couple people just, you can see the smile come to their faces. So I feel for a lot of people, I'm not saying it for everybody, but I have not met one person on this planet that doesn't seem to appear to me to have a light and joyful connection with the idea of Hawaii. So, you know, how this could, that's what I'm, when I get this message about the 67, 68, 69.
Well, yeah, everything has progress. Everything evolves.
Yes.
And that would be the natural course of evolution.
So I'm not saying that the kingdom of Hawaii coming back into so-called operation, I feel a lot is the only thing that's going to help, you know, is a major thing. But there's many major things going on, if you want to look at it one way, on the planet right now. And as you say, the Andromeda Council is seeing that the consciousness, the main thing is the consciousness being, we are rising in consciousness. And, you know, this whole part of what's going on here is, for sure, a healing for the people who have been connected and the ancestral lines who have been connected to Hawaii for so many years, and they just have been, you know, they're waiting and waiting. They've been working, and they say, "Is it ever going to happen? Is it ever going to come back? And is the kingdom ever going to return?" They've been waiting for this. But just like the spirituality of the planet, the spirituality has to, at least for myself, my own view, that it first must come from within, within the individuals, you know, these so-called supposedly separate individuals, which we're not, but it comes from within first and then blossoms out. So in my mind, I have seen this happening within people individually in their own consciousness. They wake up, oh, goodness, or they look at the data. They look at the data of what happened here. So, in other words, people are waking up to this, and oh, my goodness, it really is still a kingdom of Hawaii. Well, let's start living that way. And there might be certain systems put in place for a while that allow people to live as in the kingdom of Hawaii, and instead of going to a traffic court with the state, you get a ticket or something for going a little bit too fast in a certain zone, and they want to charge you $250. Well, you can go to the other system, the Ho'oponopono courts of the kingdom of Hawaii, something like that. And but I do feel that there's a lot of, you know, and I, of course, I don't pay any attention to like Catalan and places like that, but I pay some attention to it. There's a lot of sovereignty, sovereignty movements going on at the moment. Scotland, people are wanting to claim their own sovereignty as a group. And hopefully along with this, you know, they're claiming their own inner sovereignty sovereignty as well. So, sorry to talk so long there.
It's about people waking up, people recognizing, I guess, their inner spiritual essence. It's about a healing process. Matter of fact, there's, and Brad, you may have some insight on this, or Joe, part of the healing process is the fact that before, and even the Native Americans have taught this over years, before you can reach out to your immediate peers, to your family, to your friends, the healing process must happen within. You must forgive yourself, you must love yourself, you must care for yourself. And once, this is the pejorative view, once you get that complete, then you can start branching out and reaching out to help others. Joe, Brad, any thoughts?
Yeah, that's basically a lot of the form relating to people that are going through a healing process. The whole idea is that really a big revelation that hit me today is that if you're looking at the word hurt and you turn that particular form of the word hurt and you put it backwards, and you're basically looking at a very familiar word when you have that come through, and that represents true, T-R-U. So we're looking at the idea of true through hurt. And so when we're basically looking at the idea of hurt, we're looking at the opposite of our truth. We have to conceal ourselves from the inability of looking into our own trueness, our own truth, and being able to adopt the idea of hurt. So the whole key here really is that everything that you reflect upon that has meaning within your reality is imposed through your own accord. Every single person that you are experiencing in reality is just that catalyst about how you feel about yourself. So that could be the person who you may feel may give you the most ridicule. It may be something political. It may be something personal. It may be something educational, whatever it may be. All of these factors are just coming back into yourself to saying, how well do I respect myself, love myself, how much can I be within my own truth based upon how I perceive the world around me? And it's really not so much in the idea of political agendas, et cetera, et cetera. Those are all just catalysts to seeing exactly what we're going through as a race, as a species. As those particular forms come together, and we're looking into this a little bit more, we're seeing how we're really never able to avoid the innerness of ourselves. Because every single thing that we interact with through our reality always echoes back to our own inner self, always comes back to truth. So the whole idea is that the healing in that aspect all comes through the branches of awareness. The more that you are able to become aware of how a person, just from a conversation, has transformed your perspective, the more that you have already attained a state of healing from that. Healing comes through in the most beautiful, subtle ways, and it can come through in very intense ways. And the only reason why we always experience this idea of hurt is because we're constantly in opposition to the truth of how we're attempting to talk about ourselves, about how we're progressing through this life. So life itself is always going to be this beautiful dance through what I have referred to as the law of catalyst. You have the law of attraction, which represents the idea of a group of forefront of reflections that are coming into your reality as you perceive yourself through a life theme. When you're actually interacting with those little bits through those groups of law of attraction, you're experiencing a catalyst effect. So basically, that person is just that reflection of you, who you're telling that person how to behave around you as you have attracted that version of that person to then come back and tell you what you're telling yourself through that person. So that's kind of a funny thing. But we're basically giving permission for people to tell us about how we feel about ourselves through them to then come back to us. And that's really the whole idea. So when you really look at reality like this, you're no longer functioning together as a singular perspective. You're no longer looking at yourself as just a body or just a persona. You're now looking at yourself to see that, what can I do to look at the perspective of everybody, to find out that everybody has a very unique perspective. Everybody is very unique to their own truth. And now I'm starting to feel this come back for me. Now I'm starting to feel how everybody is just interacting, because that's how I'm perceiving myself. I'm getting a great compliment on the street. Okay, great. This is how I feel about myself, relating to that theme of what that compliment stood for. I feel that there's been a bit of a disagreement with somebody else. Okay, so maybe there's something about myself there that may represent a disagreement in regards to the relationship of that conversation. Everything is just coming back into the beauty of how we are seeing ourselves. And that's what I recommend everybody just being able to be very aware of, is that healing is just the process of how we are able to make sure that everything that represents hurt, we're turning that word around and we're moving ourselves into a state of truth. We're being true to ourselves. So it's very, very important just to looking at your reality and just be aware that the type of people that you attract, the type of events that come into your reality, is all part and parcel of the current state of being that you're aligned to in regards to you understanding how to follow your own truth.
That's a lot.
I'm glad this is recorded so people can.
And I was listening very closely. I followed most of that. If we boil down the essence of what you're saying, would I be correct in stating that as we experience life, it is the mode of keen self-awareness that tells us which parts of our emotions are still hurting, for example, and which parts are healed? I don't think actually a lot of people are aware of how much pain they carry. And actually, as long as we're here, pain, and now I'm talking about emotional pain, pain as something that's resonant in the bioelectrical structure of the human body, in fact, causes physical results such as cancers and many other types of illnesses or sicknesses, maladies. A lot of people, and Joe, I really want you to jump in here on this one. A lot of people would say, and I'm talking about other than I was walking along and I didn't see something, I tripped, I fell, and I hurt my arm. I'm talking about people who develop an inner pain in their pelvic region, or people who develop a pain in their heart region, or people who have difficulty speaking and may develop throat cancers. There are specific reasons why those maladies are manifesting. And it's not because the body is sick. It's because there is unhealed, for lack of a better word, negative energy that's still in the bioelectrical body of the human. Now, I'm not a physician, but Joe, would you take a stab at some of what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. We're not trained that way in what we call traditional medicine these days, but because I've done my own research and became a energy healer, Reiki master, I'm attuned in Reiki and Moon Aiki and Sekhem Sekhem, and these are things that helped me along the way to see energy and to manipulate, if you will, and understand it, as well as hypnotherapy. And so from different levels, people develop dis-ease. And most of the time when something is out of balance, and I know I've said this on the show several times, but it's worth mentioning that when there's one part out of all those aspects I always talk about, the mind, body, spirit, emotional, or energetic, you know, when there's something out of balance, it causes a disease or a dis-ease somewhere in the body. And so the vibration of energy that a person carries, if you're attuned to it, you can actually see the color and the aura around an individual. And each individual person, you know, the colors mean something different, I would say. And so, for instance, I walked into a psychic's house one time, first time, and I had a migraine, terrible migraine. And I, of course, I wanted to be scientific about it, so I straight-faced, walked through the door, sat down, and she says, "Oh, my gosh, you have a migraine." And I looked up at her like I was shocked. I'm like, I don't know why. What do you say? I was trying to be coy and, you know, not give up anything. And she says, "Well, your aura around your head is yellow. And to me, that means you have a migraine. Not only is it, you know, it's significant because of how much it's radiating." And I couldn't even hide it at that point. I was like, "Oh, yeah, you're right. God, I have a migraine." And so with her perspective, she saw me as having a migraine because of the colors that she was seeing. So she could actually see the vibration of energy, which meant there was a dis-ease somewhere in my physicality. She perceived it as a migraine, and she was right. And so some of these things that we talk about, not everybody can perceive it this present moment, but I think everybody has a potential to do that if they believe in it and if they work towards it. And so absolutely, there's many diseases, especially chronic diseases, that I see in a day-to-day life in my practice that I just talk to them a little bit, and I'm like, "All right, what stresses do you have in your life?" And they tell me about their financial crisis or their husband or wife cheating on them or their kids that they can't seem to, you know, get under control, and they're causing chaos in the house and so many things that are out of balance. And until they face the problem and they deal with it, a lot of times they carry this disease, or it lowers the vibration of the body, which causes the disease in the long run. And so hopefully that answers that question. But what I also wanted to get into was there seems to be a shift in the theme of what we started to talk about, and I think it has to do with unity consciousness. So what Brad was just talking about, and what you were talking about earlier, Tolik, and what KP was talking about with the blending of the male and female, and it's no longer one side. It's no longer male energy that's dominating and aggressive or assertive. And now it's becoming this blending of the male and female energies. It's also, we live in polarity here. So if you can imagine that instead of being at one extreme or the other, of positive, negative, hot, cold, up, down, all this stuff we always talk about. I think it's a unity consciousness which eradicates the separation that we've all gone through, plus the control that we seem to want to impose upon other people for the purpose of getting ahead, because that's what we've been taught, or that's the energy vibration that we've been living in. And so I think as some of these celestial beings come by, and as we go through the galactic plane, as we're going up this wave, as we were talking about, all of this stuff is all relevant. It's all connected, and it's all about unity consciousness, in my opinion.
I have a piece of data that I didn't share, and I really didn't think it was relevant, but it sure is now. What I didn't share earlier is that these people, the Daini, they are, there's a technical word for it, but they don't have a specific sex, either male or female. There's no gender. They just are. They are who they are. And
that doesn't surprise me. In fact, the people that I know from fifth dimension above, the ones that I tune into, are androgynous, is the word you're looking for. And so, Brad, I know you and I have talked about this in the past as well. And so I feel that it would be maybe move into this, KP or Brad, whoever wants to jump in now. But I know that my own personal experiences with these higher dimensional beings, they don't present, unless the person that's requiring, that perspective as a male figure or a female figure. Because sometimes they will come forward as a collective, but they represent themselves maybe in a feminine sense or aspect or vibration, so because that's what you need at the time. But really, they're non-gendered. It's more energetic, and it is androgynous.
Yeah, especially if you're moving into communicating with beings that are more in a completed format, understanding themselves as a completed self or a Christed being. A lot of the Christed beings themselves are basically androgynous. Actually, Adranos himself would represent that of an androgynous being. I'm just bringing more of his masculine counterparts because that's what I feel through myself is very much more easily and personably translatable and transmutable. But there is this, his feminine counterpart, which is Rayar. And both of them combined, they've stated that, you know, we really are androgynous. We're not actually male and female, but this is all right for you to perceive us as such because it gives you the idea of the diversity of the gender, of the feminine and masculine energies, to then helping yourselves to become whole. The greatest form of example for one to learn this is to realize where you are at the point in regards to gender-based alignment, to then eventually move to that particular type of alignment to come into a transcendence of androgyny. So that's basically what they represent. I mean, they exist as starlight contained in Sirius A. So that's a lot of his and her energy, the androgynous energy altogether. But much of them will come together, and they do represent the energy of Ra. So Ra really is, again, representing the energy of the sun. So that is a lot of their energy. I've also communicated with, you know, a lot of other people that are, again, communicating with androgynous people as well, too. A lot of other channelers, psychics, etc. A lot of beings that exist, very few of them are actually still in the diversity of gender relating to male and female. And those that are have reached such a completion point to them that they basically just see themselves as equal, compatible complements to each other. Really one of the biggest forms for us when we want to move into becoming a harmonious galactic civilization is you no longer see diversity anywhere. You don't see it, period. Everything is one. Everything is connected. It's actually very similar to, one of Stephen Greer's C5s. Really what it's all about is when you're going into that state of remote viewing, which again, I agree with him very much, is that you look into the embracing, I should say, of the connection to oneness with all of these beings, because that's where a lot of these beings come from. They come from a point where there is no separation. There is no idea of a male or a female. There is no idea of a hot or a cold or up or down, etc. Everything truly just is. It really is in that connection. A lot of these particular spacecraft that we often see are propelled by thought. They're just basically thought form propulsions, and they actually create thought form. A lot of them are actually driven through symbols as well, too. And you're basically just popping yourself from one dimension into a completely other. It's just that the dimensions are all foldable through the aspect of collective thought. So usually a collective that may exist upon spacecraft are all functioning together as one mind, with the spacecraft itself being sentient, being very self-aware, and being alive. So again, I feel that that also comes back to the comet that we're talking about as well, too, of C67P, that we are kind of, again, feeling these radio signals and that we're feeling this kind of energy with it, and that I do feel that when I look at the comet, it very much is alive, even though there is some artificial intelligence there and other particular beings that are just very fascinating. There's this connection of oneness and this connection of beautiful energy that just radiates together regardless of its purpose. It's basically just showing us an aspect of how we are all connected, because we are looking about how this, you know, communication with this comet has led into this really amazing conversation. So it's just showing us a lot of different amazing forms of conversation and communication that we're understanding ourselves through ones.
KP?
Oh, hold on. There we go. This is all a lot of the communications that I get are not any particular. I don't see now. I have seen from time to time male figures over here, but of course Pele is often viewed and reported as a woman, and that's fine. However, a few years ago, actually, I was, you know, this is sort of after my own some galactic awakening to that part of myself. Was that at one point there were more than myself, but there were a couple of us who just saw Pele was not here anymore, like that spirit used to be here. It was almost like whatever that being represents or what we've created as that being wanted to be balanced. It's almost like now the spirit of Pele will still present the face of a woman to a lot of people, but we really saw that. I mean, I personally saw it as like at one point there was just an ascension, and now she's really caretaking for more than just the land. She's taking caretaking water, the sky, air. But it was an expansion and sort of a balancing on her part. So as far as I'm concerned, she's not. She doesn't represent this feminine. This feminine spirit, certainly there's that there, but I totally agree with what, it aligns with what Brad's saying and we're all saying is that this is a balancing, either a balancing out of the masculine and the feminine, or just, we're just realizing, hey, we're both, we're everything. And androgynous is really what is going on at the moment. We're more and more people are realizing that, and it's just really I just think the whole thing is a fascinating progression as we're moving through this, and entertaining. It's the greatest TV show on earth, so. Are on in the cosmos right now. So, hey, they're sending probes out this way. They must think something good's going on.
Well, it's also a very fascinating day as well, too, that it's been for me because, with my partner, who I'm with right now, I just had a very, unique and powerful experience with her. It was that she was going through a lot of personal, emotional turmoil today. And basically for me to hold space with her today actually involved me connecting directly to her toroidal field and actually asking spirit, because she still, was dealing with a lot of these emotions, to actually allow these emotions to come through me, that I could feel them for her and actually purge back into source. And so it was actually in the middle of a yoga class where I was kind of sitting in the back corner, and she was just noticing that I started crying, and she didn't know what was going on. Like, why is he crying in the background? What's going on here? And it was basically about 5 minutes of just really, really intense telepathic energy that was coming through. And I was basically getting a lot more of a hindsight of a lot of the emotion that was going through her. And in this experience, this is just the first time this has ever happened, it was just such a beautiful revelation, I would say, of a beautiful telepathic experience from someone who you love. And for me today to experience that was so sensational and so incredible. It really just put even more enjoyment into the work that I do about being able to connect with people. And this is something that I can do, with others, is being able to connect with them to where they may feel that there's a lot of that hurt, again, lack of truth, the opposite of truth in there, to really just kind of bring that out and share that with them. We have the capability of doing this, and the catalyst to that is love, is being able to really see the love and the spark of spirit within a person. And being able to, through their permissions, connecting with their spirit, being able to actually funnel their emotions that's at the surface of their being and funnel that into yourself, feel their emotions, and actually being able to bless those emotions and sending them back up into purification of spirit. And for me to experience this today was revolutionary and incredible. And this is basically a lot of what a lot of the celestial beings have the capability of doing as well, too, is that they just basically enact themselves as one with you, and that they funnel this energy. They know exactly what you're feeling. They know exactly what your energetic states are, your feeling states are, and they're able to channel that. And they basically start shedding tears for you, and you don't know why. It's because they're basically helping that healing process to take all of those energies within your field on the surface to funnel through and help a purification effect. So I experienced this today with my partner, and it was just one of the most profound things I've ever experienced in my life. It was wonderful.
Hey, Brad, I really would like to thank you for many of the listeners that are out there, because, can you imagine what you just went through but not having the insight and then the follow-up to understand what is going on with you? How many people do you suspect are going through some of this and they're having these emotional breakdowns or feelings and not really know that it's actually they're picking up on somebody else, or they're picking up on the planet, or they're picking up on the solar flares. And so as we are becoming more unified, I think it's really important to talk about sometimes what you're experiencing or feeling is not your own. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Right.
Yeah, and that really was a lot of the case yesterday, because I was just starting to feel a lot of these feelings that were not my own. And it can be very, very challenging to really differentiate that, because you just feel, maybe was there something that I did earlier in the day that I wasn't happy with, et cetera. So you really have to kind of check in, and you're still looking at these things, and it's like all these onslaughts of feelings, and you can actually sense that it was later on confirmed by, again, somebody else. And so there can be times where we just have these very close connections, be it through our friends, through our family, through our partners, through our coworkers, through our bosses, et cetera. And we're now starting to pick up a lot of these feelings from a lot of them. These thought forms are coming into our fields. We're now starting to feel them and saying, oh my goodness, you know, I can't stand who I am, or I don't like this, I'm not confident anymore, or I'm ridiculing myself because of this, that, and the other thing. And really, we're just kind of going into this hamster wheel effect, and we don't know that we're just basically inheriting other people's thought forms and making it into our own and adopting them in that sense. So that was definitely what I was feeling yesterday. And then when I discovered a lot of the source of these transmissions, so to speak, of thought forms, I was relieved. I'm like, oh, okay, this is not my thoughts. This was actually somebody else's. But again, it was a beautiful experience in that way, because now you're just – we hear so much about telepathy. We hear so much about these connections to love and to the connection of oneness with other people. Now when we start to experience this and we see that form of confirmation about these thoughts relating to a person's state of being and their emotional states – the confirmation of actually knowing that we're dealing with this, and that realization in your reality, it is absolutely profound. And you look at reality so much more differently when you start experiencing this and confirming that to yourself that this is what's happening.
Yeah, and you know, I think this goes back to what Tolik was alluding to earlier about dis-ease. And some of the stuff that we're carrying that's not our own, that we don't understand, and we get into this spiral of sometimes depression and sometimes other things that it's a dis-ease because of the association with the people that we're not willing to give up, that's not in our greatest good sometimes. And I hate to be blunt like that, but it just is what it is. And so the other thing is, the question I pondered earlier was, do you think, and I'll put this out to KP and then maybe Tolik, you can follow up about this, because you mentioned the dis-ease part, but don't you think that all of this is about knowing thyself? Because really, everything just seems to come back to who we are, recognizing our own androgyny, our own physical being, balancing. Who are we? Is this mine? Is this somebody else's? So, KP, what would you say to that? And then maybe, Tolik, you can follow up on that.
One of the things that I really resonated and grateful for what Brad was sharing there, because I believe it was maybe a couple of years ago, I realized that, well, there's a lot of things coming up in me that doesn't feel like it's mine. And this emotional, it could either be an instant sadness or an instant, oh man, this is uncomfortableness that I would sense. And sometimes I'd even sense it in my body, and it's very much a connection. I guess I did realize that, and I've talked to other people about that they clear things for communities sometimes. I feel like a lot of times myself, I'm clearing things for either communities of people or groups of beings to assist them and to assist this whole process. It's not mine, and again, it's helpful to, you know, I guess along the way we learn and we may need help, but in distinguishing between is this mine or is this someone else's, you know, don't put yourself down or anything like that. Don't be, you know, it's like, but when I was going around the country last year, there were times when I would just feel this intense either, oh my gosh, we feel so stuck here. Or, oh my, you know, like Nashville, Tennessee, this wonderful supposedly music town. It was so thick with junk. And I said, oh, this is not my junk. This is not my junk. I'm just passing through here. And but very much so, I think. And it definitely is being really aware what's yours and what's not. Because it also is bringing up a lot of things. I found a lot of certain emotional, we'll call them triggers. If they do come up within me, I have noticed a couple triggers. It says, this is trying to encourage you. For example, if I get upset with the way somebody's driving, they're usually going too slow. And that's one of my things. And my thing has been impatience. And I noticed the last couple of years, I'm continually presented with people who drive a lot more slowly than I do. In other words, people who are wrong in how they drive. So, but we're getting opportunities to clear those for ourselves. But I really do agree strongly with Brad that, you know, we learn this, we can learn this ourselves. We can also get assistance with that to distinguish which is ours and which isn't, which is someone else's.
Yeah, I'm listening and taking notes because things are coming up. By the way, KP, you will continue. You'll like this one. You will continue to run into people who drive slower than you feel is appropriate until such time that it doesn't matter anymore. It's like, oh yeah, you know, there's somebody else moving at 22 miles an hour, whatever the number is. And at that moment, when it doesn't bother you, those people will go away, parenthetically.
Right. Well, I'm looking forward to going 80 miles an hour everywhere I drive here. So, yes.
Just some minor insight on my part. Brad, I wanted to address what you did for your partner or for anybody who decides to take on his or her emotional pain, recognize it, and then act as a filter, if you will, to purify it and release it for that person. That's probably one of the most profound ways of helping someone heal. It is completely selfless, and as many of the sages on this planet have said, love is the most powerful force in the universe. That is a single act of incredible love that you extended out to your partner to help her heal. And I'm saying it out loud and plainly to acknowledge what you did. That's a gift. It's a gift that you carry. Now, I know that we're all capable of it, but I'm not sure how many people are aware that they have that ability.
Yeah, that's very true. And again, this again with my current partner who I'm with, I've never done that for anybody before so deeply. Like when I'm doing readings with a lot of people, it is very subtle kind of energies that I work with. Just being able to talk to a person because you are very freely introduced to them, very newly introduced to them as well too, and you like to get to know them a lot more as well too, and you have some form of perception relating to the energy of like the clients that I work with. There certainly are some really great open book people out there, and you're able to really sense a lot of very positive and loving feelings, and at times it can really get you into that really loving and joyful state of reciprocation. With my own partner, though, again, there's that deep love and there's that deep connection, and that really just moved it into a much more of a deeper level. It's kind of like you're no longer playing in the shallow end, you're now playing in the deep end. And through that deepness and that depth, you're getting invitation. It's basically to talk with your partner's higher self. And again, a lot of partners can do this for theirs as well, is being able to really get to know the connection that you have with your loved one, with your feminine goddess, with your masculine god, you know, whatever you wish to refer to it as, but just being able to really connect with them and feeling exactly how much they love you and how much they appreciate you. And when you know that they're hurting and they're still trying to figure it out for themselves about, you know, what's going on here, I know that something's not right, but I don't know what these emotions are trying to tell me. And for those of us who have really worked a great deal to being able to channel our feelings, to really looking into the openness of the universe and communicate in that way, it really just starts in the most beautiful of permissions. It's the asking of their spirit, and that's it. You're not even really talking to their physical selves, because the conscious self really doesn't have too much permissions other than looking at certain things in regards to a courtesy, so to speak. But you're really looking into their spirit, and their spirit is communicating back with you. And that's basically what I was doing with our partner today, is I was talking directly to her spirit and saying, let me channel her emotions so that she can have a very great, clear day, so that she can really, you know, teach her class with such beauty and grace and do what she continues to love to do. And I will help her with the feelings, because it's not just about the idea of me putting it into the light and not knowing what it was all about, because I was able to do that later on and tell her about what it was all about. So again, that's just something that is a pure love state. You want to be able to be there for your partner, because I don't see any separation between myself and between her or between anybody else. And there's just that really strong connection that when you feel that oneness connection, you know, your whole body is your reality. It's basically just going back to what I was saying with the law of catalysts, that everything is a catalyst in your reality, from the tiniest little ant that you see crawling up a blade of grass to, you know, all the planets in the galaxy, all the stars. So everything really is just that connection of love that we can come back to, and knowing that through the love that we give, we're just being of service to help purify, and we're being purification resonators, and we're just being able to resonate that frequency of love through all of these, again, lack of truth that represents hurt, to come through and being able to really shed some light on that and helping people out as we help to purify their energies into that, so that they have a type of education that they can see and say, well, this is how you can do it yourself. This is what I experienced through your feelings, through your emotions. This is how I helped to purge it. And here's what you can do right now. Here's what your energies were telling me to tell you. And that's basically it. So you are just channeling, because we have a lot of channelers that are doing great jobs talking to other celestial beings. We can channel human beings just as easily. And again, it all comes through their spirit. They're functioning together as this funnel, as this conduit of all this information, of all this beautiful energy that we're able to funnel together with in sharing mutual love to help educate them.
Yeah. And on a maybe on a not so subtle level, I think that most people probably are picking up the energy, whether someone is up or down, happy or sad, you know, whether they're thinking of something, they're preoccupied. If we are in their space and we ourselves are clear enough and calm enough, we'll probably recognize what's going on with them even before we see it happening. As an example, with your partner, she probably sensed what was going on with you before she turned to look at you. She had to feel it first. Because that's the point that I'm trying to make.
Yeah, exactly.
And Tolik, I would go one step further than that, because energetically, right. When we're right in close proximity, we're in the field, so to speak, of the aura. And so, yes, you pick it up right away. But there's also, I'm sure Brad has done this too, just by the telecommunications like Skype or even cell phones, or you hear that vibration of the voice, and that is an energy. And so when you pick up on that, you're also picking up on their vibration, their energy, and so you can pull a lot from that. And it's so, like, you could be, say, 1,000 miles away, but as you're hearing the voice, you're still connecting to that energy source of that particular person, because the vibration goes through the vocal cords. Yeah. And as you're hearing it, it's resonating, and it's you know, vibrating your eardrum, so you have that instant connection.
Yeah, so absolutely. It even goes deeper than that as well, too. I mean, look at what Edgar Cayce was able to do with him. Basically, just being able to get the name of an individual, the city that they were living in, and the time of the location that they would be, he would be able just to tap into that and bring in so much intimate details about, you know, remedies for a person to be able to help them heal from all of these different forms of time periods that have come back. It's really just incredible. I mean, the power of our minds, just looking at conscious, subconscious, unconscious level, is so profound. It's immeasurable. And so just from the simplest things, like even when I'm doing Akashic record sessions with people, I just really need their names. As long as I get their names, I'm able to tap right into their energies, and I'm able to take them on a highlight tour of their own Akashic records, of looking where they've come in the past, you know, where things are possibility in the future. It's just profound. And like I said, if you were to ask me if I was going to do this stuff 6.5 years ago, I would say no, because I was on a completely different path. And just being able to look at it now I couldn't imagine another day not doing what I don't do, not doing what I do right now. It's really just been that much of a life changer and that much profound. You're looking at living in a heaven every single day of your life. It's incredible.
Awesome. So, you know what? We're getting into, well, I'm not exactly sure when we started, but I know we're past probably an hour and a half at this point. So we've been all over the board here tonight. We started out with the Comet 67P. We went through Unity Consciousness, Knowing Thyself. So I'd like to ask each individual panel person to just, is there anything else that you would like to bring to the table for closure? Is there anything else that you haven't said, Tolik, that you'd like to discuss?
Sure. It's more of a closing thought than anything else, and it's something we touched on just a little bit, but I'll just do it again. I think that it might be helpful for people to understand that in the grand evolutionary scheme of this solar system and this planet, as it moves through this more dynamic area of space, that all of us continue to pay attention to things like Comet 67P and a lot of other celestial issues that are happening up in the cosmos, up in deep space, because this is a busy area of space. And as my own learning process has progressed, I've learned that it's not only our consciousness becoming more awake and aware as a human species on this planet, but the events also that we decide to live through, these causalities as these celestial bodies come close to our planet, come into our solar system. What I'm trying to say is I think it's important for everybody to pay attention to these, to all of these things. And maybe for us also, the three of us and others, to do like we're doing tonight, find ways to tie in, to bring relevant ways of living that are relevant simply to the acknowledgement that there are things going on out in space that are going to affect us, affect this planet, maybe even affect our vibrational frequency on an hour by hour, day by day basis. I certainly don't have all the answers, but I'm always amazed to learn what other people are thinking, like you guys, and see how it all does tie in. You know, like this big cosmic evolutionary puzzle, and we're just helping to put the pieces together. So I think my message is all about just staying awake and paying attention. That's all. And I've enjoyed this conversation. It's been fascinating. So, Joe, thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thank you for coming aboard from the Southwest. And so, KP from Hawaii.
Oh goodness! I really enjoyed the conversation that we had today, and I kind of feel that there's quite a bit of. I especially enjoy hearing the. We each come from such a different. I will call it different. We come from a unity consciousness, but from different viewpoints and different paths of operation, and this and the visitors that the. Whatever you want to call it, the probe or the visit that we're now having is certainly from this 67P, I feel is really assisting and kind of waking up humanity again to its connection with the cosmos. And so, we all are, there's different groups that are working together on this planet, and I feel that as far as I'm concerned, it's most important, at least for myself, to follow that inner guidance and follow the guidance that you're getting and use your discernment with messages so that you don't get lost. But you'll never be lost. So we do have help here. We do have assistance. And I really feel a lot of the things that are coming out now, you hear a lot about sovereignty, but to me, again, this the constant, continual mention of sovereignty is something that's reminding us that the only sovereignty that we, what we really need is to recognize our inner sovereignty over ourselves, our own path, our own spirit, and again, coming together as a unity of sovereign individuals, if you want to call it that, is really what we're, the path that we're on right now, from what I can see. So, aloha from the beautiful Big Island, and look forward to another conversation.
This is Tolek. KP, that was really well said. I think that the point that you made about being aware of your using your inner discernment and being aware of your own sovereignty is a really important issue.
Yes.
And not in the pure dictionary sense of that word, but I guess more along the lines of in the pure recognition of the sacredness of who we each are as a bright fragment of creation. That's the important part.
I still don't believe we're all going to be, we're not going to be dressing up in these gray silver suits. I still think there's going to be a lot of beautiful color no matter where we go, you know. So,
awesome.
Thank you.
Okay, and so Brad from Canada, and I just wanted to throw this out there for you. I know that you were in Maui recently, so I just want, maybe you could give your testimony to the listeners. We've been talking about energy in different places on the planet. As KP was saying earlier, he was in a location that he felt was a lower vibration. He could tell right away. I've had the same experiences many, many times. And I'm curious to see what, if you feel the same thing or how you felt when you went to Maui, and then whatever your closing statement is. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you again, everybody, for being on this call. I really appreciate it. It's definitely been very expansive and illuminating. Yeah, I have been to Maui. It was last January, and I felt like I was in paradise. You really just kind of reconnects you to a lot of other perspectives that you have had that can even go back to times of Lemuria. And that really is what Hawaii represented to me. Were there pockets of higher frequency in certain areas? Absolutely. I don't have the names for a lot of the areas that I visited. We did go on the road to Hana and enjoyed that beautiful trip as well, too. But we basically just found this nice little oasis, as I called it, and I was actually able to spend the night under the stars. And, you know, I'm not that much of a constant traveler. A lot of the places I've gone to has mostly just been around the West Coast, Pacific Northwest. Hawaii has actually been the farthest I've ever gone travel-wise. But I'd say out of all the places that I've visited, Hawaii has been probably the most beautiful and gorgeous place on the whole planet from what I've been able to feel. There was a lot of connection to spirit in Hawaii as well, too. I was also able to connect very strongly with a lot of different extraterrestrial consciousnesses. The stars were basically following me all around everywhere I was going. I could see these stars, just groups of them, being able to move and follow me and have these kind of beautiful intricate patterns in the sky. I was also able to improve my channeling state with Adronis when I was there. I was also able to just get this nice, beautiful view of a sea turtle swimming directly underneath me when I was snorkeling one time as well, too. So for me, I had no lower vibratory experiences, really, with Hawaii whatsoever, with Maui, just in the areas that I was at. Everything was exciting. Everything was great. And you know what? I've gone past the point where it's not even so much about low vibration and high vibration anymore. It's all about the idea of experience. Because again, if we're looking at catalyst, we're looking at the understanding that even if there's something that doesn't serve me, what is it about that particular aspect of catalyst that doesn't serve? And it's all basically just attempting to tell us about refinement. So I don't really look at anything in high vibration or low vibration anymore. It really is just isness. And everything that we attract relating to low frequency or high frequency is basically just the polarizations of what we are comfortable with ourselves to look at and what we're not. And that's all that matters. And so all you're attempting to do is being a gauge. Sometimes your gauge will go into the red, sometimes it will be in the beautiful green. It all depends. And it's not about that anymore. I'm kind of moving past a lot of that stuff So really a lot of what I do is just being able to look at isness and seeing exactly how reality as my body conveys itself to me and how it communicates. And that everybody is really moving into this particular new form of understanding. You know, I'm just not trying to toot my own horn, but really what I've just been able to discover through reality has just been so mind-bending, because it's a thanks to a lot of the stuff that I've looked at with spiritual circles and a lot of ancient traditions and all that. But that is now starting to change. There's a whole new modernization, I think, that's coming through how we're just understanding reality fundamentals, and that it really just comes down to catalysts. That I no longer look at the person and saying, well, I don't want to talk to that person, he's not on my wavelength, he's low vibration, blah, blah, blah. And then I come right back to myself and say, why would I say that? You know, what is it that's going on inside me that's saying that this person is low frequency and don't want to talk about it? You know, our own ego is just as much as God as anything else that represents high passion and love and light, etc. There is no bounce back in regards to that which is beyond the Creator, which is beyond the idea of oneness. So it's really just telling you about yourself. This is where one recommendation of an exercise I'd like everybody to try is being able to go in front of your bathroom mirror, your bedroom mirror, look at yourself right in the eyes, and count how many times you can say sincerely, I love you, to yourself. Many, many, many times. Just being able to challenge yourself. Maybe I was able to say it 3 times one night, maybe the next night I'll be able to do it 10 times. But being able to look at that, and when you really look into the I love you mentality, there is no lower frequency, there is no higher frequency, there just is frequency, and that's it. That's what reality represents. It's no longer about the highs and lows, it's not about the ups and downs. It's really being able to transcend the degree of polarity, because all the polarity is attempting to tell you is saying that, are you done being able to look at yourself through a gauge, or can you see reality for what it really is, based upon how you're able to interpret it to the degree of isness. And that's where we're going. This is where the law of catalysts comes together. It's looking at the catalysts of ourselves and seeing how well we can continue to refine ourselves just by looking at the frequency of the people that we attract that are all just coming back to tell us about how we think about ourselves. And that really just moves you more into that Christed consciousness, moving you more into that state of just feeling complete with everything that is around you, because you go beyond self-perspective. It's not about the self. The self is just, it's a stepping point. It's a stepladder. It's a stepping stone. And when you go past that and you're able to put yourself in other people's shoes by actually looking at their perspective, not from your perspective about how you would deal with the situation if you were in their position, that's passé. It's being able to say, I can understand, I acknowledge, and I appreciate your perspective. Maybe I don't agree with it, but I acknowledge that it exists. Dear brother, dear sister, thank you so much. That's it. That's what we're on this planet to do. So just be very, very mindful of that, about how reality communicates for you through the catalysts that exist within it. Thank you so much. Much love to you all, and may it be well with you.
Perfect. Thank you, Brad. And so I'll just close by giving a little my own thoughts. And one is some of the things that we discussed, like Brad was just saying, I mentioned about a low vibration and a feeling. And so for sake of communication, because not everybody's telepathic, sometimes we use these high, low, up, down, good, bad to discuss this with people that's what they would understand. But I'm in total agreement with what you're saying as far as and I say this all the time. It's interesting. I say, you know, there is no right or wrong. There just is. And that's how I see it. And so to communicate some of these things, I guess it's becoming more challenging for me to discuss it. But it's nice that you brought something to me to work on and to look forward to progressing. So I got to thank you for that. So I'm going to try to be more conscious of talking about negative, positive, and trying to communicate in a more effective way. And so
we've all come from those points. So just being able to, and that was a lot of what I did as well. See, well, there's low frequency energies around you, or there's high frequencies, etc. And that's great as well too, because it's just helping us to remind us exactly where we're going and, you know, the kind of alignment that we're in. And sometimes you do have to compensate with those energies. If the person is coming through that, it's all about being a living mirror. And you're doing that in the form of a reciprocation to help communicate with them so they understand certain principles. But as long as you feel it for yourself that you know that it is beyond all that, you're already doing exactly what you're needing to do.
Okay, cool. And so the other thing is you had mentioned about loving other people, and I would take it a step further. And the other day I started doing this, and it's kind of funny just thinking about it, is that I'm looking at this toaster as I put the toast in it, and I'm loving that toaster for being and doing its job for toasting this toast. Of course, I'm loving the toast because it was going to help fuel me for the day. And so I'm looking at everything now, not so much as a physical object, but knowing that everything is made up of energy. Everything's made up of consciousness and a love vibration. And so I am becoming more and more thankful for everything. And gratitude, thankfulness, is a really high vibration. So I would recommend, you know, maybe people being open to the possibility of being thankful for everything that is outside themselves. And just maybe try that for a day and see how that raises your vibration. And the other thing that Brad had mentioned talks about basically unconditional love. And so not judging another person for being who they are, or you might not agree with how they're acting and their behaviors, but you can understand them and you can see where they're coming from and just send them unconditional love, or just see them without judgment, just simply is unconditional love. And so it's really been a challenge for me at times to live that. I know it. And a lot of things and a lot of concepts we're talking about, we know it. But learning to live it is, I think, a major task for humanity at this time. And so people like ourselves that are coming on these calls and throwing ideas back and forth and being that reflection to help one another see a part of who we are that makes us human. And I'm talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly, because there's a lot of parts of each individual person that we don't want to face up to. And that goes back to what Brad was talking about, the truth. And so what is the truth? You want to hide, you want to talk about high vibrations and I'm this spiritual person, but what about the other aspects of you? Because, you know, if you're living this human experience, we live in polarity. And so you could recognize that there are parts of yourself that maybe in the past that you don't agree with what you've done, but look at the growth. Just looking back at that past experience, you can see how far you've grown and maybe even send yourself unconditional love as though that individual person, even though it's you, you can almost look at it as though it's a younger brother or something like that, sending yourself unconditional love, because really everything's happening in the present moment of now, even though we perceive it as past, present, and future. And so anytime you're sending yourself currently love, as Brad said, I love you, I love you, I love you, or in the past, and an event that has happened that helps raise your vibration back then, that carries through to the present moment of now, that helps you surrender and release what you're carrying, that baggage that causes that dis-ease, or that low vibration that can cause ill. And so a lot of these concepts, I don't know that people talk about, especially physicians, but these are things that I talk to my patients about daily. And even on radio shows like this, people will contact me and say, do you know anybody else, another doctor that talks like you? Because I really appreciated that, and I have my own personal issues I'd like to discuss. And so I see us moving in this direction in medicine, in technology, and all kinds of ways. And I really think that we have a positive future. Even though we're saying positive, negative don't exist, things just are, I like the err on the side of positive, or because of the experience I want to have and attract to myself. What I put out is what I bring back to myself. What Brad talked about earlier was that law of attraction. And so I like positive experiences. And even though there are some what you would perceive as lower vibration because you feel it, how can you look at it in another way to say, okay, why am I being annoyed? As KP said, when this person's in front of me driving 20 miles per hour, I'm getting annoyed. Then the next thing you know, a combine pulls out, and if you would have been going fast, you would have wrecked. So you see the blessing in disguise and say, oh, okay, I better just calm down, and why does this bother me so much? And so I really appreciate being on this call. Thank you guys for coming on board and collectively coming together. We had the catalyst, as Brad and Tolik had said, and KP, of the comet 67P that brought the whole conversation to a whole other level with – just like the comet, as I said, beginning is multifaceted, this conversation was just the same. And so I can see that humanity is going into this this higher vibration, and we're going in waves, as we talked about. So as we go up, sometimes you got to assimilate it before you hit the next wave. And so that's all part of this this process. So again, thank you guys. And until next time, we're going to send you love, light, and laughter.